something just doesn't feel right this week. I know just the person to call to help me fix this.
Hello?
Hey, Phil. I know that you know that Anita and Ebony are in New York this week, recording the podcast without me. Something about this just doesn't feel right.
Yeah?
Look, Phil, I can't go a whole week without giving my fans something.
Tell me more.
Here's my plan. Whatever bonus segment they record in New York, you just say, oh gosh, sorry, you know, the audio file got corrupted, or I don't know, whatever it is people in your business say.
I like it.
Meanwhile, I'll record my own special bonus segment. The listeners will love it, and Anita will think I'm saving the day. I'll be the hero.
But Carolyn, Anita told me that she already wants you to record the bonus segment.
She does? Phil, I'm getting another call. Hey, FemFreak Radio listeners. Get ready for a very special live episode recorded at the Kickstarter headquarters in Brooklyn. Fantastic Drip backers, I'll be recording an all-Caro bonus segment where I'll be answering your questions, mostly about my long history with video games. Everything Feminist Frequency produces, including this very podcast, is listener, reader, and fan-supported. Thank you for helping us stay on the air and on the web. If you want access to special perks and exclusive backer rewards, join our podcast community at d.rip/femfreak. And now, let's join Anita, Ebony, and special guest Jay Smooth for our second ever Feminist Frequency Radio Live!
Radio. We are coming to you live from Kickstarter headquarters in Brooklyn, New York for our 23rd episode. This is our second live show ever and our first live show that wasn't on a boat. Cool. So we can't get married, basically, is what that means. Anyways, I am your host, Anita Sarkeesian, and I'm joined by the original killer queen, Ebony Astor.
Hey!
And I am so excited to introduce our special guest for tonight's show, cultural critic, hip-hop DJ, and my mom's favorite person on the internet.
Really?
Yeah. Jay Smooth.
Wow. Thank you. Good to be here.
On today's show, we're going to completely toss out most of our usual script and just chat with Jay about pop culture-y things, because why not? We will wrap things up with a little something in What's Your Freakout? And a huge shout out to Kickstarter and Drip for hosting us in their beautiful Brooklyn office. Drip is Kickstarter's brand new subscription-based crowdfunding platform, and Feminist Frequency Radio is on it. So if you want access to special perks and exclusive backer rewards, join our podcast community at d.rip/femfreak. Now on with the show. Hey, I got a story for Ebony. Ebony's got a story for us.
Yeah, I was going to say welcome back.
Before. So hello, we love you. I have to start with this story.
Yeah, let's
Yesterday,
hear.
We were at Tribeca. We were in the green room. I left to go do an interview or something, and I came back, and Ebony was literally vibrating. And I was like, what just happened?
Something very interesting. Okay, does anyone in the room, and don't be afraid to say or not respond, because I would assume most of y'all don't, but if you follow me on Twitter, you know already what happened, and you know why it was such a big deal. So, Anita is in a new documentary called Netizens that premiered at Tribeca. I'm hanging out in the green room like I'm part of the talent. I'm not, but whatever. I played it off very well. I'm in there. There is a woman in a beautiful, just exquisite designer dress, navy off the shoulder. There's like little like points of light on it. And because I'm a polite person, I don't just take a picture. I ask her if I can take a picture. She's facing away from me. So I tap her on the shoulder and I'm like, excuse me, can I get a picture of your dress? And my phone is already angled like down towards her body. She turns to me and it's Karen Gillan, y'all. It's Karen Gillan.
You should Amy tell Pons. Them who that is.
Yes, it's Amy from Doctor Who. I lost my shit, but I held it inside. And so I tried to play it off and like slowly migrate my phone upwards. The picture was not good and I looked like an idiot.
Okay.
So
Ebony is the biggest Doctor Who fan.
Yes.
Like, she was freaking out internally and didn't even be like, oh, hey, big fan, can we take
no,
a picture?
No, she just went, there was, I just froze. I just froze. And she was so sweet. She was so sweet. And you could tell she knew that I knew what was up. You know, but she played it off. I'm sure she gets this all the time. But anyway, so that's how I took a picture of a beautiful dress that happened to have Karen Gillan in it. If you want to see the photo, you can't really see her or the dress because my body stopped working. But that's what happened. Anyway.
It was spectacular.
And that's probably the closest I'll ever get to Doctor Who. Sad trombone. We'll have Phil add that in.
Yeah, we'll do
post-production.
That for sure. What's up, Jay?
Not much. It's great to be here.
So
yeah, I saw. I'm so
you.
Glad I got the full context for
yes.
that photo
yes.
because I saw
that fuzzy photo. Anita is always clowning me because I basically operate my camera phone like an old person that just came from the Amish farm.
Her selfies have like one, like it just her eyes and her head, and then like
my
the
shit
rest
is
of the
art.
Ceiling.
You have to work for it, okay? You have to work to understand it.
But that's a good trick for ingratiating yourself. That's how actually. When Studs Terkel used to do oral histories, he would pretend he didn't know how to use a tape recorder, and that was a way to cut the tension and make a connection with the subject. So that's actually something to hold on to.
Oh, don't give her that.
I'm trying. I'm trying.
See how affirmative Jay is versus Anita being like, I'm going to make you tell this story on the podcast tomorrow because you're a dummy.
That's mean. I would never do that. It's a funny story.
Uh-huh.
You love
okay.
it.
Okay.
All right. What are we doing?
What we are doing is, so I came up with about 9 or 10 completely ridiculous questions to ask Jay and Anita.
And you.
Apropos of nothing. No, y'all are not going to learn nothing about me. This is straight up incognito. I'll give you fake answers. But so I'm going to throw this stuff to y'all. Answer honestly. Answer insincerely, it doesn't matter, but I'm hoping that, you know, it will kind of spark some conversations. If it doesn't,
we'll just
I will feel free to do,
hour.
Like, you know, my one-woman show, recreation of A Color Purple, but we will have to charge
okay,
for that.
Okay, so that will be a bonus segment for our drip backers one day, because
right.
I want to hear that, too.
Right? Yeah, so do you want to start with this? Do you want to start
yeah,
with...
Let's do this.
Okay, Jay, what is one career completely... unrelated to the one that you have now that you secretly dream of having?
Wow. I mean, I don't know. Well, I don't know if making music is completely unrelated because I've always been sort of one step removed from
mm-hmm.
that. It's sort of, what is that book? The Artist's Way talks about
yeah.
being a shadow artist where
yeah.
you're sort of one step removed from what you always wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think in my heart, I always really wish I would have just been a musician and made music. And, you know, I've had chances to dabble in it and all the other media I make here and there. But I
mm-hmm.
think that's the thing I really grew up wishing I could get into. And I come from a musical family. But
yeah. So
I'm also,
would it be
I'm
like
glad
instrumentalist,
to,
singer, like composer?
I mean, I grew up in a time and place to be a hip hop person. So
mm-hmm.
probably making beats and rhyming.
You yeah. do a little bit, though.
Occasionally.
Yeah.
I used to get out around one verse per year.
That's more verses than I'm getting out per year. Okay, cool. Anita, what about you?
I have no fucking idea. What about you?
Hip-hop dancer?
You lie.
I'm not lying at all. I have zero sense
of rhythm.
Is that
why you ask
rhythm.
Me every week if I'll go
yes.
take hip-hop
so,
dance classes
yes.
with you?
Okay.
I'm not making
yes.
this up. Right. I love dancing, but, like, I can't do, like, coordinated moves.
Oh, no, I'm not good at all, you know? But I just have this dream that I will wake up one day and I will have had 20 years of, you know, being like a world-renowned choreographer. Like, I will just have that in my spirit. I guess I wake up in an alternate universe, but I just feel like I should be able to dance. It's a straight-up Salieri situation, you know, where, like, I believe God meant to give me the skill to move. I do not have it, however.
I have no idea. I really love food, and I feel like I would do something related to food, but I'm not, like, a great cook or anything, but, like, maybe I could have been if I started young. So I feel
mm-hmm.
like I would, like, there's a part of me that, like, wants to be in a kitchen and creating or, like, wants to be adjacent to that world. But I don't feel, like, there's not a part, I don't know. It's hard for me to answer because I'm like, I
do
like
you
that.
You want to just be like, you know,
well, here's
like a food tourist, you know, go around the world, like Anthony Bourdain style,
maybe like a
eating
food,
stuff.
Yeah. Well, I
did y'all
that.
Listen to our episode where we talked about, oh, Lord, what's the name of the show?
Ugly Delicious.
Ugly Delicious. and, you know, how they're the phenomenon of watching people kind of consume other cultures through food has been primarily dominated by male commentators, right? Because there's always an element where it's like, this person is being very adventurous by eating this thing, which, okay, let's talk about the colonialist implications of that shit. But anyways, I think it would be great if you did that kind of show, but I would also love it if your tiny ass was in a kitchen, you know?
Jesus Christ.
I would. I think it would
so
be
here,
great.
But here's the thing is, like, when we talk about, like, careers and interests, like, I turned my interest into a career. Like, mm-hmm. that's what Feminist Frequency is like, I was a big geek, and, like, I turned watching movies and playing games into a job. And so I feel like I moved into food because it was separate from my job, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you, like, when your passion becomes your job, it becomes work. And it's not the same. It's not the same kind of, like, I don't know. Like, it's a little more complicated. And so I feel like I don't necessarily, like, I like doing what I'm doing, and I like that I now have this other hobby, which I'm also sort of turning into a job, but that's a different story. So I think it's complicated, like, turning your passions into your career and what you would want to do differently at, like, this age if you would want to start something new, you know?
Yeah, that's – I've been having a similar experience, especially mm-hmm. with all the stress that comes with following the news and right. dealing with the state of the world now. When I'm away from trying to be on top of what's going on and what my two cents will be about it, and we'll probably talk about this more when we get to our respective freakouts. I'm drawn more and more to things that I'm completely ignorant about and have no stake in, because there's mm-hmm. there's no stress of me even having an opinion or any expertise on this. So I'm just drawn to more and more esoteric things that mm-hmm. I just have never dealt with before, and I'm just learning about the subculture around this thing that's totally novel to me.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I had hoped that y'all would say stuff like, I've always wanted to be a fireman, or I have wanted to be a long-haul trucker, but I think very thoughtful answers are better. And if you want to reveal that you've always wanted to be, like, a long-haul trucker, that's cool, too. Now would be the place to do it.
I can't say
listeners,
that that's
true. I don't know
listeners,
how to die.
Anita is giving me a look that conveys that she is already sick of my shit, and we're only 8 minutes in to the podcast. Okay, question number two. Mm.
Lay it on us.
Okay, I got to set the scene for this one, all right?
Yeah.
It's 2036.
Oh, boy.
The cyborgs have taken over.
Yes, the world has gone to shit.
Oh, it is. That is where we're going.
I'm setting the scene here.
Yeah, okay. Shh,
shh. You're part of a small band of survivors eking out a hard scrabble existence in post-apocalyptic America. When you sit through the garbage fires at night trying to keep the mutant wolves at bay, you tell stories to the younger members of the clan. What is the one thing you tell them led to the breakdown of society? You can be as petty as you want. My answer is mayonnaise.
Oh my God, how did you come up with these questions? Just out of your brilliant brain.
Mm-hmm, that's one way to look
mayonnaise.
At it.
Mayonnaise. Please elaborate.
There is no elaboration.
So this is the
it's
food
the worst.
Podcast is what this is turning
yeah,
into.
Yeah, it's the worst. It's disgusting. I can't handle it. And I think the fact that there are two kinds of people in this world, people who know mayonnaise is the worst,
right.
And people who don't.
You're the deal breaker here.
And ultimately, we will fight, you know, and families are going to be torn apart. So I'm just saying, that's probably going to be what causes it.
I think mayonnaise has its place in moderation.
Thank you. I just covered on everything. I'm into it. Okay, what's leading to the breakdown in 2036?
Yeah, you know.
Tech companies? Sorry.
Straight up. Wow. from the Kickstarter headquarters. That's a bold statement. And the podcast ends early.
Y'all are great. I don't mean you.
Mm-hmm. That's it?
No, well, okay, let's riff on this. There's so many things. Global climate change. I mean, that's it. But then you'd have to explain that, like, it's the fault of industrialized nations who refuse to do anything about it because of capitalism. And, you know, then you're going into this whole anti-capitalist thing. And blah,
yeah, break
blah,
it
blah.
Down for us.
No, please.
We're sitting around the garbage fires, you know? Walk me through how this happened.
Well, what's interesting is that if we think about how, like, stories have shaped our world, right, and how, like, stories are how we passed myths along, which were ways to keep your community safe. So you would, instead of being like, don't go over there. There are dangerous animals. You would tell a story being like, over there, your great uncle was mauled by this giant beast and blah, 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 blah. So, like, what is the myth that we would tell if we say, like, okay, climate change destroyed the world and corporations, blah, blah, blah. Like, what's that story? We can't do this on the spot. I mean, we can, but I can't.
Yeah, I didn't prep either of them, as you can tell, for these questions. I kept them in my heart, close to my chest. But yeah, I think there obviously this is not a trick question. It's not like you're going to give me an answer and be like, wrong. That's not what did it, you know. But everyone's got a different take. That's going to be like, this is going to be the tipping point, right? And obviously, the obvious answer, you know, for people of a like liberal persuasion is, you know, the kind of gradual push towards right wing reactionary politics in the U.S., you know, global superpower or whatever. And you know, other people are going to be like, yeah, before we even have time to, you know, reckon with that, the earth is going to fall to shit, like the oceans are going to rise and, you know, whatever, like we're all going to be coughing up lead smoke. So yeah, I just wanted to see what you thought, like, you know, this is going to be it, because there's such a sense of pessimism right now where people are just like, yeah, this is the last days.
When you're contributing to it
right now by this podcast,
by asking the questions, it's fine, it's fair.
No, but because I was ready to be like, all right, that's what you think, well, let's work to fix that. No, I wasn't, for real.
Okay, wait. Do you want to chime in on this?
I don't know. I mean, I think there is an answer, and that's the answer. So
yeah.
I would feel guilty saying something glib after this.
All right. Bring us back up, Ebony.
These are designed for glib answers, so don't feel like you need to.
I mean, you know, I don't think Kanye joining forces with the Dilbert guy is a good sign.
What the?
You can hear the laughter coming from the back.
Okay, someone today asked me, like, what my beef with Kanye is, and I was like, have you seen his Twitter lately? Like, he's come back, and they're like, no, I don't look at Twitter. I was like, well, that's why your life is better than everybody else's.
But I think, like, that's, you know, if you decided to participate in Kanye's kind of resurgence on Twitter, right? But dude's been mad problematic before this. You know,
I follow two people on Twitter, and I can't get away from it, basically. And everyone's, like, retweeting this shit and, like, you know, having their hot takes on Kanye being back. And I'm just like, oh, whatever.
But I'm wondering, like, how did it happen? How was he exposed to this in particular?
To the Dilbert guy?
Yeah. Like, did someone send this to him and they're like, hey, you know, I think you should check this out. Does he have a Google alert? I bet he does. You know? But I'm just wondering how this happened and why he was... Because the dude has got to be taken in. Like, he's clearly someone who, you know, is open to all kinds of stimuli, right? You know, like, as an artist, he's taking in a lot of different influences and ideas and everything. But that just seemed like such a random one. And then it'd be like, that's the one I'm sharing. Like, I'm going to send out, you know, 9 minutes at a time, this Scott Adams Periscope.
Yeah.
Well, he had provoked everyone by bigging up this far right wing.
Candace Owens.
I was trying not to say her name.
Sorry.
So as not to extend the 15 minutes. But yeah, so he got lots of attention from that. And he was probably sifting through, seeing who approved and disapproved, and that guy Scott Adams is one of the people who approved, I guess.
Yeah.
So we'll see him with Ben Shapiro by next week, I'm sure.
Oh, Lord.
Ben Shapiro.
It's the beginning,
you know,
of the end.
Yeah,
times.
Like Alex Jones has extended, you know, an invitation. He's got, as if, you know, if the albums don't come out and blow people away, he's got a real lucrative career on the circuit, the political commentator circuit right now.
Oh, God help us.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds miserable.
It really does.
Ugh.
Okay, let's bring it back to media specifically.
Isn't this Kanye one, media?
Huh?
Nothing.
It could be. It could be. And I want this to be, this is when the show starts to get controversial, okay?
Oh, now.
Like, these are the sound bites people are going to clip and be like, oh, you know, this is when you're, like, RIP to your mentions, okay? What is a piece of media, film, TV show, song, band, whatever, that you will go to your grave believing is way overrated? Way overrated. If you would like, I can have our producer disguise your voice in post-production so people don't know if it's you or Anita responding at any given point.
I'm so bad at like, if we were, like, hanging out and, like, listening to music and stuff, I'd be like, that one. But, like, I have such a hard time pulling these out. This is why this podcast model doesn't work for me, because I'm like, I don't know. I don't remember.
Don't make
anything.
Me go into the audience and ask them.
Rush? You know I hate Rush.
Oh my God.
That's the kind of reaction I wanted to get.
I don't know why that's a controversial one. They suck. I'm Canadian. I'm allowed to say that.
Oh, is that the rule?
That's the way it works.
Is that the rule? Like, yeah. Okay. She's got a Canadian passport. It's okay, guys.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to NYU for one semester, and my roommate was an aspiring bass player who would practice the bass line from Tom Sawyer every night.
Oh, my God.
Night.
Oh, buddy.
And that person
for
is
about
still
5 hours. That's about 70% of the reason I dropped out.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, yeah.
Wow. Anything from you?
Yeah,
TV show, film?
Yeah, similarly, that's mm-hmm. I don't really keep a log in my head of things that I think of that way. I need someone to point
I think that this is related to my question. Should I share my late night bar party question?
Yeah.
That I asked last night. I think it's related to this a little bit.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's a little inappropriate.
No, go
is
ahead.
Is it okay?
Go
Can
ahead.
I be a little inappropriate?
Yeah, names have been changed to or names will be changed.
All right. So here's the question. You are, like, getting busy with someone and, you know, you're, like, pants are off or skirt or bottoms of some sort and there's a tattoo on your thigh, on their thigh, on your partner's thigh. What band is tattooed on their thigh that would make you just, like, full stop? Like, just, like, what? I can't continue this. See, that's
good answer.
So the
we've heard Nickelback
answers,
from the audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the obvious answers are Nickelback and Insane Clown Posse.
I feel like Steely Dan.
No, that's just your answer. But, like, I feel like this can be really personal, and this gets into that, like, overratedness, mm-hmm. right? My answer was Linkin Park.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one.
Yeah, Sublime comes to mind.
Oh, yes, yes.
See, I was a teenager in Southern California.
This is not a band I hate, but if you have enough passion for them that you got a tattoo.
Thank you. I just find that disconcerting.
See, and these are the answers I like because it like reveals something about you and it's like a little more personal and I'm into it. I think that's a really good answer.
It's like that quote from Nick Cave who said, you know, every time there's some random piece of music playing somewhere and I don't like it and I ask what it is, it turns out to be the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I feel like that would be another legitimate response.
I loved the Chili Peppers when I was younger. I saw them live like 5 times. And now I'm just kind
of
like,
they started off cool. They were with George Clinton.
Yeah.
It kind of went to another direction, I guess.
It's not good anymore.
Yeah. Okay, so the next question is it's kind of related. The one piece that I think is way overrated.
Yeah.
RIP to my mentions. Okay. I'm never, ever... ever gonna get into Breaking Bad.
Yeah, no.
Just don't.
Oh, man, if we're going here, I got so many of these.
Yeah, okay, well, let's get into it because, like, I recognize that it may be wonderful for you, but it is not for me. I have tried, and I have a visceral response when people talk about, like, the best show ever created, whatever, right? And that's so subjective. And I
recognize people say that about Breaking Bad?
Yeah. And when people say it, they typically say things like, you know, it's between The Wire or Breaking Bad. And I'm like...
What?
Yeah.
Who are these people?
Yeah, this is, I think...
So here's
thank you. Someone from the audience is like, yeah. I will go ahead and claim this. And it's just like, I don't think it's a bad show, but it's just, it's not for me. And I'm like, I don't see it in the same pantheon as
so here's
like Wire,
here's
so.
My... Okay. Full disclosure, I never watched
am
the
I
show.
Am I losing us drip backers right now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
When Breaking Bad was around, it's not on anymore, right? It's been long over. Okay. I don't know. I didn't fucking watch it. So, there was this whole, like, this huge push to have all these anti-heroes, right? And that was like, we're tired of these heroic characters that are all goody two-shoes and we want to be more gritty and complicated. So we got all these movies with all these shows, sorry, with these anti-heroes. And I was getting so tired of this shit because, like, it's really complicated. And I'm not opposed to the trope's existence as much as, like, how it is used so frequently. And I think that, like, one of my problems with it is it's very rare that this isn't this way, that when you have a protagonist, you are immediately sympathetic to the protagonist no matter how shitty they are. And so you identify with them because, like, to be the protagonist is to be the one. And so we're sitting here and identifying and kind of having maybe complicated feelings, but, like, you still want to see what happens to them. You still want to engage with them. You still want to watch, like, several seasons of shows. And I think that's shitty when it's about shitty people. Right. So like I had like there's all these shows that are like just full of like all these shitty people and you're supposed to be like fascinated by how terrible they all are. And I'm like, but there's no one to identify with or to like actually like. And so I feel like I never gave Breaking Bad a chance because it just was it came out when all of those were coming out. And I'm thinking of things like House. Right. Isn't that the one with the doctor who's a dick? Mm-hmm. Right. Like it's the same thing where you're like, why would I want to watch you just be an asshole to fucking everyone? Also. While we're on the topic,
I did not make the movie, but okay.
I think you might agree with this. Uh-huh. While we're on the topic, is Sherlock versus Elementary, for example. Mm-hmm. So, like, Sherlock is a character who is a dick, and why? And one of the reasons I don't like it's BBC that did Sherlock, right? Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why I don't like Sherlock is because he's just a dick in every episode, all the time, and it gets really homophobic and it's gross. Whereas in Elementary, they show him like learning and growing and trying to not be a dick. And that's much more interesting to me than like a stagnant one-dimensional, or, you know, I'm not going to say it's one-dimensional, but it's not like a character who's like shifting and growing and learning, right?
I would say that, and this is, I mean, not that anything is off topic for this ramshackle podcast, but I would say that there was an attempt to kind of grow Sherlock's character in the latter two seasons. And I would argue
Wait, how
that
many seasons have been out?
Four?
Oh, I gave up
Can
on
I get a nod
two.
If I'm correct? Three? Okay. Yeah. But I would say that that's one of the reasons why the show sort of started to decrease in popularity and entertainment value because he was no longer a dick and people were not quite as interested in the depiction of that character like once he was defanged a bit, you know? But I agree that I think there's something, and a lot of people didn't want to give Elementary a chance because it started, you know, fairly soon after Sherlock and after people had kind of declared an allegiance for it. And also, like, you know, it was on CBS and it's yeah. the American version and American versions are always worse and, you know, blah, blah, right? They didn't want to give it a chance, but I think there's been some incredibly smart stuff done, particularly with the presentation of addiction and recovery. On that show.
On Sherlock?
On Elementary.
On Elementary, yeah.
That
yeah.
has been just, mm-hmm. I think, one of the best depictions in modern media. And I wish more people, I mean, it's a CBS hit show, so it's not like Anita and I are the only people who know about it. But I wish more people had given it a chance.
Yeah. Okay, I got one.
Okay.
I finally got one. Are you ready? This one is legitimately going to, like, piss people off.
Mm-hmm.
The Big Lebowski. I do not like
it's
that fucking movie.
Me off.
Mm-mm. I've tried like two or three times.
Try again.
I can't. No. I'm done.
Okay.
I'm fucking done.
Okay.
It's not my jam. Like, it's cool that people like it. Whatever. It's just not for me. So there you go. That's my
okay.
answer. It took us this long for that to, like, percolate in my brain.
Okay, cool. Jay, do you have one where you're like, no, it doesn't matter how good this thing is. I'm never going to get into it. You know? Quit asking me. Quit telling me about it.
Nothing else is coming to mind. I'm trying. What was the movie that... people kept comparing it to Boogie Nights about two or three years ago. Jennifer Lawrence is in it.
Oh,
American
with Bradley
Hustle?
Cooper?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't understand what was so highly touted about that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I wasn't that impressed with it either.
Yeah, we can have the David O. Russell conversation another time, you know, but
I guess I
agree.
Do kind of feel pretty neutral about most of his stuff. Mm-hmm. And isn't it always Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper in every fucking movie playing the same people over and over again?
There was a trailer, or excuse me, an ad before Anita's documentary yesterday at Tribeca.
Oh my God.
I think it was a watch.
Yes.
And it was Bradley Cooper. I encourage you to look this shit up on YouTube because it was banana soup.
It was
him, like, scruff, you know, like,
it's
super,
like
masculine
Europe,
cosplay.
Right? It's the commercials you see in Europe where it's like the really suave dude in the desert and like getting on a motorcycle, like really serious.
But it was clearly like, you know, Bradley Cooper's normally clean shaven and he's pretty like dapper dude, right? And I think there was an attempt, like him in his leathers, to present him as like this very like guy's guy, you know, riding this motorcycle
Absolutely.
In the desert and like pulls up to a plane and they're like going the way.
What was the thing? He checks his watch.
Yeah, you know,
the time.
Like, right. And he's like taking the road less traveled or something or whatever. And I'm just like, boo, no.
No, it is.
This is not you.
It said something about like the only man to blah, blah, blah. And I'm telling you, that entire theater
just
erupted in laughter
up.
Because
yeah.
it was just the most gendered, stupid bullshit.
But also Bradley Cooper. And I was just like, kudos to your agent because there is no way you were right for this particular role. But yeah, you got it. And you know, nice for you to collect those checks. Anyways, check it out on YouTube.
Oh, you know, one I will say that I, for some reason this conversation made me think of. I never really got into House of Cards.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I feel like it's the kind of show that's ostensibly about politics, but it has no perspective or curiosity about politics and how it works in our lives. As politics is just sort of a vehicle for these plot twists and intrigue. And it doesn't, it's not actually being thoughtful about our lives and what any of this means.
I agree. And
this is very surface, which I felt about Breaking Bad to an extent as well. Mm-hmm. Although I liked Breaking Bad a lot, I feel like compared to The Wire, it's just really good surface level storytelling and construction, but it's not curious.
Yeah.
It's not like The Wire is really thinking about the human experience and these institutions.
Can you explain to me why there's the comparison? Like, does Breaking Bad actually get into like deep politics and like structural shit?
I'm not really sure. I mean, it's a very well done, well acted show, and I guess drugs are a major theme as it is in The Wire to some extent. I don't know. I don't really see a natural comparison necessarily.
I will say, like, I'm going to keep it 100. Many of the people who, and I'm not saying you, lovely audience member who was like, yep, bring it back. But there is a palpable sense from some people who put The Wire and Breaking Bad, like rank them similarly, or rather take Breaking Bad over The Wire. And I'm like, how much of that is you not wanting or being able to insert yourself in a primarily black, you know, hour of television? Just not being willing to take that journey with black characters as opposed to white characters. That's not always what is behind it, but there definitely is a sense sometimes when you listen to people rave on and on about Breaking Bad, and I'm like, yeah, the, you know, same kind of shit going on in The Wire, but you didn't, you know, feel The Wire, and they're like, no, and they can't really articulate why they didn't like it, or when they do, you know, they use code words like, you know, urban or whatever, and I just didn't feel it, and I'm like, oh, you just didn't want to watch a black show.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay. What is something people don't know about you, but they should? You don't have to reveal no secrets, but the people don't know about you, but they should.
Absolutely nothing.
Your life is an open book.
Everyone knows too much about everyone. That's what I'm going to say over the garbage fire.
I don't know how we got here. I had nothing to do with it.
Right?
What you tell me, what should people know about me?
What should they
know about
you?
Long enough.
Keep it short and sweet. When people meet you, like if you're meeting Anita, I would say the thing they should know about you is be direct and keep it short and sweet.
That's what they should know about me?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I will say there's a reason why. It's because, you know, Anita has the ability, more than anyone I have ever met, to go on a flight of fancy based upon the least amount of, like, distraction. So if you want to talk to her, get anything from her, like, be direct. Ask very quickly. Be like, hey, this is what I need, whatever. You know, no small talk, none of that. That's what I would say.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. That's not what I expected you to say.
That's what I think.
All right.
You may think something else.
My favorite movie is Dirty Dancing. I don't think a lot of people know that. I've been a little more public about this information recently, but I will defend it to the ends of the earth. And it's refreshing to, like, your childhood movie that you loved still holds up as an adult. Like, most of the stuff I loved as a kid does not hold up, and I wouldn't watch it again. And so it's really nice that I can be like, no, man, this movie is so political, and it's awesome, and Patrick Swayze is the best.
Oh.
So that's something that you can know about me.
Okay. Mine is, I love country music.
I like country music.
I love...
Wait, you don't. What? Were you just talking?
I don't.
Hold on. No. I didn't mean to say that.
No,
that just came out of my mouth.
Something like, what, you hate Luke Bryan or whatever. I do not love every country western singer, but I love, especially old country, Golden Age country.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah,
no, this
I'm
is good.
All
I send you music sometimes, so like I'll add that into the rotation.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah.
Because I love it. I grew up in Wyoming, and so, like, I feel like I came by this honestly, and... I think when you say, like, oh, I like country music, the expectation is you like new country, which there's some of it I can jam to, whatever, that's good. But no, I just love old country. So
I feel like I got into a
bit. When I make my pile, I'm going to get a nudie suit. Anybody here know what a nudie suit is? Like those old, like, bedazzled, heavily embroidered Western suits. Ooh, okay.
That's pretty awesome.
Thank you.
So I have a small obsession with cowboy boots, and I have a lot of them. And I have no room for them. Mm-hmm. And I think I got into country more. I'm like a big fan of Dolly Parton and stuff like that, which is like easy, right? Mm-hmm. And like Patsy Cline and that sort of thing. I think I got more accepting of like being into some kinds of country music through like sort of indie rock that's influenced by Southern mm-hmm. country, right? And like starting to realize that I liked some of that and like how that, like, because I think a lot of, I don't like any mainstream country. I think most of it is not my jam, but there's like, it's this weird thing. Remember when you're a kid and you're like, what kind of music do you like? As if like you only like one kind of music. Mm-hmm. And people, like, I grew up in white suburbs and the answer would be anything but rap or country. And you're like, mm-hmm. what?
Wow. Yeah.
Right? Like, why would you write off an entire genre of music ever?
Because you're saying something else when you say
oh,
that.
For
right?
sure.
Like, that's yeah. what people are doing.
For sure. What are your feelings on country music?
I'm not conversant or have a lot of expertise, but there's mm-hmm. a lot of country. I mean, I love Dolly Parton, of course. Mm-hmm. I love all bluegrassy kind of stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there's someone, maybe you'll know, there's someone I heard in the last year or two who the mm-hmm. songs are pretty politically oriented.
Oh, boy. Would that be like maybe someone new, you mean?
Someone who's been on the scene. And it did something
like
relating.
Maybe like Chris Stapleton or something?
It wasn't Chris Stapleton. I like okay. his stuff,
wait,
too.
Wait, what's the name yeah. of that shitty dude? I was going to make a joke and it ruined it because I don't know his name. What's the guy we made fun of?
I do not
wait,
know,
wasn't
Anita.
Wasn't he the sexiest man of the year or whatever?
Oh, ooh, yeah, Blake bad. Shelton?
Yeah.
He's not good.
He's bad.
No.
There is a... There's a I'm literally opening
Anita's
Spotify.
Anita's called
right
up
now.
Her Spotify, yeah.
There is a artist who I'm super into that's just like straight up country, and there's no way I'm gonna find this. If I find this during the podcast, I'll mention it. But I just found her through actually an episode of one of Anthony Bourdain's shows. Mm-hmm. And like she's straight country, and like she's the themes of it and the music of it, and it's really good. And she was
Casey
playing,
Musgraves?
No.
Okay.
I literally can't.
I'm just going to throw out random names for the last 10 minutes of the show, and they'll all be wrong. That'll be entertaining for y'all, won't it?
I'm going to just keep scrolling, and I will eventually interrupt to call this out.
Well, I mean, if we're all going to confess esoteric.
Yes, please.
Odd interests, I've become obsessed with professional wrestling in the
last
2 or 3 years.
Does that have to do with Mike Eagle?
It directly relates to our friend Mike Eagle. Actually, on an episode of his old podcast, Secret Skin, which I hope is archived somewhere, he was talking to my other friend, Hari Kondabolu, and they turned out both to be big pro wrestling fans, and they, through that conversation, introduced me to the world of pro wrestling podcasts,
mm-hmm.
where all of these current and former wrestlers are so good at being analytical about the craft, and it brought me, you know, I sort of looked at it off and on growing up,
mm-hmm.
But this gave me a whole new fascination, and I had to start watching the shows again to be able to follow what's happening in the podcasts.
Yeah.
So it's become one of those break from politics escapes, although there are ways of politics seep in really fascinating ways mm-hmm. now, actually, mm-hmm. because this younger generation of performers, a lot of them are more progressive and are carving out space for different representation than the awful representation that there used to be for women and people of color, as many people will know if you saw anything in the 80s or earlier.
That's the thing.
But there's a lot of really awesome performers and a lot of women doing really great stuff. And there's still this sort of tug of war between the older generation, like Vince McMahon, that's still kind of running things. So it's a fascinating time to be watching. And it's also just the shifting expectations and demands of having a totally different relationship with your audience than you used to, with mm-hmm. what they call the death of kayfabe, where mm-hmm. the default was that the audience was assuming this was real or at least suspending their disbelief. Mm-hmm. Now it's a relationship where every serious fan assumes that it's scripted and mm-hmm. is sort of watching to form an opinion of what the writers and bookers and producers are doing. It's almost like the good guys and bad guys are the people in the writer's room and the performers are a conduit for that. So how do you as performers and writers adapt with this really unique mix of athletics and improvisational theater and a scripted story? How do you adapt on the fly to pleasing that audience?
Right.
So I've been into that.
That's amazing. Okay, so I'm going to reveal my ignorance about contemporary wrestling. Where are people, like, watching, consuming type of whatever, because it seems like, yeah, like if you grew up in the 80s, like early 90s, whatever, like it was on TV a lot, you know, and like basic cable, you could, you know, find it. Is it still like, and I'm just not seeing it on TV?
WWE is still on two nights a week, and they have their pay-per-views. They have their channel that you subscribe to, and there's endless hours of other content. Then there's also lots of indie leagues. There's a huge league in Japan, New Japan Pro Wrestling, that's a lot of people here follow. Then there's lots of different indies here that people follow.
And the women, like, are they coming? The reason I'm asking this is because all I know about female wrestlers, like the interesting stuff that I wanted to get into, I learned from Love and Rockets. People know Love and Rockets, that comic. Like, okay, whatever, I'm aging myself. Anyway, there seems to be like a very strong Mexican female wrestler tradition. And I wonder if, you know, we're importing some folks here because you're saying there's more women, or if that continues to be the case, if there's still like a strong female.
There are. I haven't seen that many of them crossing over into WWE, but there's, there's, what's the name of the show? Is it
Glow?
No. Glow is good.
I was going to say, do you think that Glow is around because more and more people are getting into wrestling now? Or do you think it was just like an interesting story? And they...
I would guess a little bit of both. Yeah. But there's a show, Lucha Underground, that a lot of great Mexican performers and women especially are in there. And there's, you know, there's a big scene like in England and Europe. People come from all around. And
we got to add this to our podcast.
It's been in a sort of WWE's in this strange place where they've sort of been dragged kicking and screaming into really letting the women shine, but are really into patting themselves on the back, like, hey, we set them free. Meanwhile, the strength of their performances forced them into doing it like 10 or 20 years after they were. So it was great to watch and also frustrating the way that it's presented by the corporation.
That's a good answer. Yeah. I'm going to look that up right after this show. All right. Do I have time for more questions?
We got one more question. Also, I did find the artist. Her name is Margot Price. Really great Tennessee-based country music singer. All right. One more question, then we'll go into free guests.
Now, this is a question that like I'm real about because both of you exist in this space where you, like, okay, you were just talking about your friend, Hari Kondabolu, right? Okay. Anita, you know famous people too. But of the celebrities you have not met, okay, what celebrity do you believe, deep down in your heart, would be utterly charmed by you if you ever met? Like, they would be like, yeah, like, you feel like you might be able to vibe with them and y'all would become friends. Don't tell me I'm the only person who thinks about this kind of stuff.
Well, who's yours?
I have many. I'm convinced most people would be charmed by me.
I mean, most people are charmed by you.
No, that is not the case whatsoever.
I'm just saying.
Aw, people love me. Just kidding.
Who, you know, when you watch like interviews, I don't watch a lot of interviews with celebrities because I don't like to know them in real life. Well, like, I don't like to know the actors of characters that I like. I want to keep that relationship in the fictional realm. But sometimes you see interviews with celebrities and you're like, man, you just seem so down and cool. I'm totally blanking on who any of those are. But you know who I want to be cool and down and like me a lot is Emily Blunt.
Yeah,
she's my favorite actor right now. I think she's just killing it, and I want her to be cool. I don't particularly need to meet her or like need that in any way, but she's cool.
That's good.
I hope she's cool.
Yeah,
that's a tough question. I mean, I've always felt like I wanted to be friends with Erykah Badu, but then she'll go off on these rants.
Yeah,
yeah, but you might be able to pull her back.
I don't know.
Like, as her good friend, you know, you might be able to be like, no.
There's some people that you're like, no, I can appreciate you from afar. Like, I can value your work.
Yeah, that's how I always felt about Prince. Yeah, I was afraid if I ever, especially because there was that stretch of time when he was sort of doing these religious interventions every time he met fans. And I regret, in retrospect, of course, now not seizing the opportunity when I had a couple of chances. But yeah, I always felt like, you know, I love him so much as an artist, I don't want to have some kind of awkward...
But don't meet your heroes. It's the worst. I would never... I mean, I'm surprised that we haven't talked about Prince at all yet. I would never want to meet him. I wouldn't. I just need... He's so kind of... to that. He's just a little... He's super wacky, right? And I feel like I would not deal well with that.
It was... Yeah, I mean, you know, there are lots of stories now of him being really gracious with people, and there are lots of people who, you know, worked with him and will say he was a jerk. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think, you know, for me, some of the most interesting stories about him not being wacky, but just being so completely quotidian, right? And being like, hey, you want some pancakes?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
But that's the thing of, like, the sort of genius mentality of... just like whatever strike urges you in that moment, and being able to like have the privilege to just be like angry or mad or happy or whatever, and like everyone around you needs to deal with your emotions in that moment because it's the privilege of being around you, right? Mm-hmm. Which is very much like very coded male, right? Very like that genius mentality. And I feel like he, in what I know of, I've heard of stories of him, like he seems like that kind of person.
I think he was definitely accustomed to having that, me being in my mindset where I can be at one with my muse and keep producing is paramount, and everyone else is going to be, you know, like the stories they would tell. Mm-hmm. He's going to call you at 2 a.m., say, I need an elephant, and you're going to go get an elephant. Accustomed to living that way.
That's what I'm doing right now, I guess.
Uh-huh. I think his opportunities to be gracious maybe were with fans more often because that's not a component of that relationship. Mm-hmm. That's a sort of downtime where he doesn't need that sort of thing from you, and he could be gracious.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my, you know, pop psychology.
That makes sense.
Yeah. What's your
Tracee Ellis Ross?
Oh yeah,
I feel like we know
we're 1 degree away from her. We know people that know her.
Did I know that?
Yeah, you did, because we talked about this. We talked about trying to interview her.
I probably blacked it out because I was like, it'll never happen for me.
She's,
but I feel like I
so
would
delightful.
Work my hardest to not be weird if I met her and put on my like put my best foot forward.
Yeah.
So that she would like me. Like I would really work at it, and I think, God willing, it might happen. And I feel like if she did like you, she would be the kind of person who'd be like, hey, you know, I got people coming over. You know, I'm just going to cook a little bit, come by the spot, you know, whatever. I feel like she would be that person.
Yeah.
And then I would just end up in her Instagram feed.
I'm like, how do we make this happen for you? Oh, Jesus. So you're going to turn into that movie. What was that movie? Ingrid Goes West. Did you watch that?
I was going to say, Single White Female.
Oh, well,
I will
the new generation of
Single White Female, Tracee Ellis Ross.
All right.
I look just like her. Come on. Kidding. Oh, my God, y'all.
Wow. Wow. All right. On that delightful note, let's move into What's Your Freak Out? You want to start us off, Ebony?
Sure, because it's very short. So my freak out this week is New York as a whole. Y'all, give yourselves a round of applause. I have had the best time. And Anita, like, I got here on Friday and pretty much within a couple hours texted Anita and was like, I'm moving. I'm sorry. We're going to have to set up a new remote working situation. Got to hang out in Tribeca, been in Brooklyn a bit, was in Harlem, you know, stayed in Queens. Everywhere I went, I had a great, and I recognize I'm here for business, but I'm here for something that I love. So I'm getting to see like the best parts of the city and meet great people. If I lived here, I'd be salty as hell. I know that. But I'm having such a wonderful time. And one of the things that I have been loving is, and this is surprising because you know, y'all, that I generally hate people and I don't like strangers, but I have loved the proximity to so many different kinds of people. So I live in LA and it is so diffuse and so distributed. Yeah, there's tons of different kinds of people, but you gotta work to see those people. I don't like having to work for it, you know? New York just gives it to you. I've just been loving it. The food has been great. The people have been great. Y'all are great. So my freak out, New York.
Okay, so the first thing I said was, New York's great, but the first thing I said was, you know that the...
we need that on every podcast.
I know, it's great. I love having the like laugh track behind mm-hmm. us. The weather's been fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And like this ain't normal.
Yeah. No, I know, but I mean I'm
just saying, it makes my trips to New York are super contingent on what the weather is like when I'm here. And like I'll love it. Like this week it's been great and like last time it was terrible.
To be fair, I don't leave my house.
Yeah,
so
I know,
it doesn't matter if my house is in New York or LA. No, as long as the heat's on.
Yeah.
What does it matter?
That's fair.
I'll look out the window and be like, look at that, love it.
All right, Jay, what's your freak out this week?
Well, you know, like I was saying, when I'm taking time away from the news, I'm having to search more and more for something I can de-stress with, because so much of all of the online media that's all around us has this sort of look at me, look at me, look at me, like me, share me, be provoked by me energy to it, which is just how we're all compelled to create and under these algorithmic overlords. So that's not judging anybody for that. But I'm trying to find things that'll just be more calming to have in the room with me. I've been watching just random Twitch streams. Mm. And one that I watch a lot is a woman named Squibbins, who does speed runs of these old retro games that, again, I know nothing about. You know, I stopped playing video games in the Commodore 64 era and then came back to it again recently. But all that sort of NES, that whole generation of games, I know nothing about. But she does these speed runs of games like the old Zelda and other stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it's really fun watching someone have expertise in something I know nothing about. I find it... The process of playing speed runs requires you to try and do everything perfectly and then start over if you make one mistake, basically. Right. So it's, I find it sort of grounding and meditative to watch her calmly just play for a minute and have to start over, play for a minute and have to start over, play for a minute and have to start over. And, you know, as she's doing that, she's just talking about her life and has a really supportive chat community going on there. So that's, there's a lot of filtering you have to do when you go on Twitch. There's a lot of sort of bro-y bros whose energy does not de-stress me. But there's also a lot of really fascinating subcultures and
so
places
Carolyn,
to go. So
Carolyn, our other co-host, is super into speedruns and like spends a lot of time watching them and in the communities, and we should connect you with her because she like and there's I think there's two events every year that are like big speedrunning events.
I think that's how I found Squibbins.
So I can't sit and watch that much of it, but like I will watch, like when someone breaks a record, like I'll go back and watch the stream, and it's incredible to watch, like just, and like the amount of time it takes to know that you need to like jump on this one little tiny like pixel quickly enough to like break the 1 second, like whatever. It's just, it's, it is a dedication and commitment that I don't have for anything. That's cool. So my freak out this week is about Prince, actually, so it's fair that you're, I mean, it's nice that you're here. So Jay is a huge Prince fan, and I'm a very moderate Prince fan, but yeah, like when he died, you were out in SF, and we were
just
like
by coincidence. Yeah, I was, when the news came out of him passing, I was on my way to the airport to fly out. To
and
the
I
Bay.
Was like texting him and another friend being like, I've never actually reacted in any kind of emotional way to the death of a celebrity because I don't know them, so it doesn't matter. But like this wrecked me. So it was kind of nice that you were around that night.
Yeah, it was really good for me. He was such a huge presence in my life. You know, I'm definitely one of those super fans.
Yeah.
And I was coming to the Bay for a speaking engagement, and I'm always cramming to the last minute, so I had very little space to really process what for me was a huge loss, you know, relative to it being someone I didn't know in real life. So, us being able to meet up that night definitely helped.
Yeah. So my freak out this week is that there was a so Prince wrote Nothing Compares to You, which you would know from Sinead O'Connor. And for folks who don't know Prince very well, he wrote a lot of like big hits for other artists that you may not know that he wrote. So and this is probably like the biggest, probably one of the biggest ones that he wrote. So a track came out of the original recording of when he wrote this, where he wrote, arranged, and performed it, which is really super special to listen to. Like, it was just never heard before. It was set by... What have we heard it before?
Some of us have.
Yeah, see, I hadn't. I'm not a super fan. It was really delightful to hear, and like whoever released it, they set it to footage of Prince and the Revolution rehearsing in the late 80s, which was just like, it was really nice to see that. So the article I read said that it was recorded by Susan Rogers in 1984, and one of the quotes that she said about it was that the song came out like a sneeze, which I thought was a really funny way of saying it, just like, it just happened, right? I listened to it like 3 or 4 times already. Like it was a lovely, delightful thing to come out this week. So, that's our show. You can catch us back here every single Wednesday. You can check out all of our work and our other podcasts at feministfrequency.com. And did you know that we are launching a brand new podcast called Cinema Ball? The first episode comes out this Friday, so be sure to check it out. And follow us on Twitter at FemFreak to stay up to date on all of the news. We always want to hear from you, so where can people bother you about, I don't know, what did you
my
say
TV
today?
My TV opinions?
Yeah.
You can reach me at Breaking Bad or at Ebony Aster.
Yeah. I am at Anita Sarkeesian. And Jay, where can people find out more about you and your work?
I mean, you can just search J-A-Y Smooth on Twitter and Facebook and find me that way, or put in J-S-M-O-O-T-H 995, and whatever media I'm making, I'll be sharing that.
Sweet. And is there anything you want to shout out specifically that you're working on? Or?
Pretty much. I hope people will keep checking out the Crash Course Media Literacy Series. It's right in line with a lot of things that are in the news right now. The latest episode is about media ownership, so it taps right into what's going on with Sinclair Broadcasting. The episode right before that was about advertising and privacy, which obviously taps into a lot of things. So I hope people will keep checking that out.
Yeah, and we will link that all in the show notes so you can check it out. Our producer is Phil Circus, who also composed our theme music. And thank you again to the great folks at Kickstarter for hosting us and helping us put on the show for you. Special shout outs to Taylor, Alex, Cassie, and Travis, who put this whole thing together. Woo! Thank you.
Yes.
Bye.